and welcome to what is now an officially off-season edition of the Happy Half Hour. And it's off-season now because they just played that last football game of the year the other day. So we are now officially in that point of the year where we're everything's pointed to 2024.
New year. Everybody's 0-0.
Everybody's 0-0. And you know what? Are any of us really surprised at how that game worked out the other day?
You know, we had to do preseason picks, and that was my preseason Super Bowl. I think I did say the 49ers were going to win, but as the season went on, we talked about this before you left for Vegas. Yeah. I've seen that 49ers team lose to that Chiefs team before.
Yeah.
And went exactly how we thought it would.
And that Chiefs team's just going to beat people. I mean, it's just they've reached that point. As I mentioned, I got tired of being the guy who was wrong about Tom Brady. I'm now officially tired of being the guy who ever thinks Patrick Mahomes is going to lose again. So it'll
never
happen.
Never discount him in late in the season or late in games.
It will happen eventually. I mean, they'll go through a run. Somebody will get hurt. They'll lose their mojo. There'll be coaching changes. Something will come up that'll, you know, right. It'll be a slight hiccup. But as long as that guy's playing, you know, they are going to have a chance. And I don't know. I want to ask you about this to see. You're young and analytically minded, right?
Sure.
Where did you come down on coin flip gate?
I think what stood out to me most about it was the fact that the 49ers players admitted that they didn't know the overtime rules. And then you compare that to the Chiefs, who said they spent 2 weeks on it,
right,
all the way back in training camp, and then spent time on it each week in preparation during the playoffs. That comes down to coaching.
Yeah, and listen, one of the things I kind of wonder about some of that sort of stuff, I think there is something to be said for compartmentalizing your information. For instance, your backup guard doesn't really need to be well-versed on the nuances of overtime rules
right. Changes.
I mean, certain people, it's like point to the field, go do your job. Now, I mean, obviously the head coach needs to know, quarterback, those kind of guys who are involved in the very granular game management part of it need to know. But I know everybody's beating up on Kyle for taking the ball after winning the coin toss. I think we're beating him up for the wrong thing. I mean, I think there's still something to be said for the notion of if you keep that game tied, having the chance to be in sudden death position, have that third possession. Now, where Kyle screwed up is fourth and four at the nine.
Yeah.
And kicking there rather than going for it there. Because you either keep the ball, score a touchdown, take the lead, make Patrick Mahomes score the touchdown he eventually scored, or you leave them in such an unenviable field position that punting is an option for them on the next possession.
Right.
I just think that, you know, we're beating them up for the wrong stuff. I think there is a lane. You know, we've now got a set of data that includes one outcome on these rules, and everybody's going to kill Kyle for taking the ball first. I don't even know that that's the wrong play, but he certainly got too conservative too early in that situation.
I think he would have been better if he would have just stuck to the reasoning that a lot of people thought he originally took the ball, which was to give his defense a break.
Fair.
If he had just stuck with that reasoning, and nobody would have questioned him about it. Two, I can understand the thinking of wanting that third possession if that second possession went to anyone besides Patrick Mahomes.
Sure.
And if you're facing a different quarterback who you can – I saw an insane stat this week, Darren. There have been, I can't remember the exact number, but it was, you know, some odd number of drives in the fourth quarter or overtime of a Super Bowl that were considered game-winning drives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what quarterbacks' stats were in that drives, you know, whether they won or lost. Patrick Mahomes in those drives in Super Bowls,
yep,
is like seven, or playoffs or something, is like 7 of 7.
Yeah,
he's never not put together a game-winning drive when he had to in a situation like that for a championship.
All of the things. That's what Patrick Mahomes does. He just does all the things all the time. His team's going to always win every game from here on out rest of his career.
And those little nuances, I totally get your point. You're right about, like, you know, your backup left guard doesn't need to know it. But those are also the things that I think can come down to you just want everyone on the same page.
Yeah.
And I remember a few years ago there was this like obscure rule that came up in a game, and even the officials had to stop and ask for clarification from New York on what the rule meant. And there were all these Patriots players that got on Twitter during that time and explained it, because they all said that there is a day in training camp where Bill Belichick goes over all of the obscure rules that no one else knows.
Sure.
And so I just think there's something to be said, too, for everybody being on the same page. Because if you're not on the same page about what the overtime rules are in the playoffs, you're probably not on the same page about other things that are going to come up in a game.
You can definitely give Kyle a pass for the strategic if you choose to. The operational, he clearly fell short. And I think he did in a number of ways. I think just in watching that game as a civilian, I was sitting there yelling at the TV in the second half. It's like your two best players are number 23 and number 71.
Right.
Tell the little one to follow the big one around. That was the path forward. And if you're trying to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands, that's the way you do it. You tell Christian McCaffrey, get behind Trent Williams and go where he goes, because he's knocking somebody down, and that creates an opening for you to do your thing. And, you know, Christian had the early fumble. And they
very uncharacteristic.
Yeah, uncharacteristic for him, but he was the guy that they didn't use nearly enough in the second half. And stop me if you've heard this one before, Kyle Shanahan stopped running when he should have kept running. So not everybody wants to believe it, but every now and then that's the sound football strategy. But it was quite a game. Quite a game. Thoughts on halftime?
I liked it from the perspective of a millennial. At first, I kind of knocked it for being too slow at times. I think if he had started with the song, oh my God, if he had come out with that song, it would have instantly upped the energy of the whole show. That being said, there were still the vignettes within it that I really, really enjoyed. And, you know, as soon as he starts singing, like, Love in This Club, and yeah, I could write a thesis, Darren, on how the song Yeah is the one song in this world that will never, ever, ever get old. You turn it on and people instantly perk up and start singing and attempt to start dancing. And I also think that, like, the ludicrous part of it was every, you know, millennial girl's first foray into rap. And,
right.
And any of us could sing it at the drop of a hat.
Lil Jon and Luda come out and it's like, why was this not in Atlanta the other year?
Right.
Why did we not do this then?
And then the whole end of it, like, also, it was an entirely Atlanta-based crew that put on the halftime show. That was one of Usher's request.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely should have been Atlanta. I have to ask, and I'm probably going to make podcast Matt antsy about whether or not he has to cut this out, but you said that Christian McCaffrey and Trent Williams are the first and second best player on that team. Where do you put Brock Purdy?
Others receiving votes. I mean, listen, I don't want to go full Cam Newton here, and I'm not wearing a hat today, but use your imagination. Maybe I am.
It's got a feather in it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, Brock Purdy is Jimmy Garoppolo, is, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, any number of guys who've been in that system who aren't that guy, who aren't him, as the kids say. And, you know, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. I mean, you know, the Carolina Panthers went to a Super Bowl, and I tease Jake Delhomme all the time. I said, when we talk about you as a player, you know, yeah, you're in the Hall of Honor, all that kind of stuff, but everything seems like a slight when you start talking about Jake as if, you know, he's just some mid quarterback. I mean, Jake, I always argued when he was playing in the 2000s, Jake kind of lived in that band between like the 8th and the 14th best quarterback in the NFL. So if you wanted to be pedantic and say top 10, could he be? Maybe, but, you know, kind of right there in that window. And Jake's fine with that. Jake understands that's kind of his place. You can still do a lot of damage as a team if you've got a quarterback who lives in that neighborhood. So, hey, you know, Brock's fine. You know, take him for what it's worth. But
I mean, that's an offense that Nick Mullins once ran to success.
I mean, this is the Kyle Shanahan circle of life. You overachieve with a quarterback nobody thinks is any good. Mm-hmm. Then people start thinking he's really good. And then people slam him for not being as good as everybody thinks he is. And then you go look for another one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I figure the shelf life of Brock Purdy is another about a year and a half before people get itchy again and start wanting to know, when are they going to trade three picks for the next Trey Lance? Oh, wait, that didn't work the last time. So I just think that they're in a funny spot. They're still a talented team. You know, there's going to be some change this offseason, a lot of guys coming and going. But I just think that they're positioned to continue to be in that realm for the next little bit because they are so solid. They can run with anybody. They do have the kind of personnel on defense, even though they've made a change on defense. And, you know, offered up our old friend Steve Wilks, fairly or unfairly. That's one of those things Kyle Shanahan's good at, is making sure everybody knows it's somebody else's fault. But
that was a defense that held Patrick Mahomes out of the end zone for a lot of that game until a special team mistake, too.
Patrick Mahomes scored 19 points in 60 minutes against that defense, and one of those touchdowns came on a short field after the aforementioned fumble. So I just, you know, Steve's treatment aside, I think they are always going to be positioned because that roster is so deep, so talented, so good. You know, they're also out there doing it without Dre Greenlaw, who kind of popped an Achilles waiting to run onto the field. So
weird.
It was bizarre. It was unusual. And it was one for the books. It was very Las Vegas. It was quite a show all the way around. So it was definitely something to see. Speaking of something to see, the reason I was in Las Vegas was to see our old friend Julius Peppers get inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I hope if anything we sent back from Las Vegas last week, I hope the thing that came through clearly was just how giddy Julius Peppers truly was at being named to the Hall of Fame. He knew going to Las Vegas, he had found out, you know, when Bruce Smith knocked on his door a couple weeks before, and he held that secret and he thought about it. And I just love the fact when I'm talking to him Thursday night after the honor show, he said, "I see Barry Sanders in the hotel and I can't tell him yet because nobody knows and it's still a secret." And I'm just sitting there thinking, I'm in the Hall of Fame with Barry Sanders. What is this, guys? And just seeing the look on Julius's face, we're not accustomed to it because Julius is, in every way, shape, and form, larger than life. A, he's larger.
Right.
But B, because he's always been up here on this level with the gods of football, we think he's impervious to human emotion or feeling any kind of way about his place in the game. Gang, Julius Peppers was floored when he was walking around the Merlin Olsen luncheon the next day and Warren Sapp comes over and hugs him. Julius was just like, dang, that's Warren Sapp. And, you know, Warren's kind of joking with him saying, you know, telling Julius's kids, your dad was a lot better at this than me. And just the grin on Julius Peppers' face to see that kind of, not childish, but childlike enthusiasm in his eyes was really neat to see, for lack of a better word.
And probably surprising for those of us on the outside looking in because, you know, for so many of us, we look at his game tape, we look at his resume, and it, of course, how could he not be a Hall of Famer and, for that matter, a first ballot Hall of Famer? So that just really kind of speaks to his humbleness and his personality as well. And that did definitely come through. And everything that came back from Vegas.
I hope just so. And we're going to have a lot of cool stuff coming for you over the next 6 months. I mean, some of the stuff we were gathering while we were down there, you may not see for several months, maybe even beyond the enshrinement, because we've got some special stuff planned with Julius coming up later this year. But it was just so neat having that window into his personality, into his spirit of being able to just enjoy that moment. And walking around that luncheon on Friday, talking to other Hall of Famers, it takes all of them a year or two. Leroy Butler, who I love, by the way.
Love Leroy.
Leroy,
one of my favorite people.
Leroy is amazing. And he was talking about, with him, it was Drew Pearson.
Yeah.
And he told this fantastic story. He said, and Leroy's just great at telling stories,
yes.
which you know from your time in Green Bay. But Leroy talked about Drew Pearson, and he said, when I was a kid, Drew Pearson was my guy. I had a Drew Pearson shirt. It wasn't a jersey. My sister just drew an 88 on a T-shirt because we were in poverty.
That sounds like Leroy.
I hear you, Leroy. But they all have that guy for them, and different guys. John Randall talked about Alan Page. They all have that touchstone for their own lives in football that they consider, here's the guy I emulate. Here's the guy I consider up there at the top of the mountain. And then to consider that you're suddenly a peer takes a second for all of them. And I think it was cool watching Julius process that in real time, for sure.
A very quick little aside story. You know, you talk about them having guys. We all have those kind of moments, too, working in this business where we think, wow, I'm here.
Yep.
I'm standing here a part of this, and I get to be the person to document this. Leroy is probably my moment, because it was after he had been inducted into the Hall of Fame last year, mm-hmm. and he came back to do to get it at Lambeau. If you're in the Hall of Fame, you get your name on the mm-hmm. the stadium, and so they come back to Lambeau for that ceremony this past year, and it's done at halftime. LeRoy, for those that don't know, is also who invented the Lambeau Leap. I mean, it's now iconic. Other teams even do it at their stadiums, but it's the Lambeau Leap, and it started with LeRoy. And so after he had his little ceremony there at halftime, they had him go over to the wall to do a Lambeau Leap. Now, that wall is actually pretty high. It's over 6 feet high, so he had to get up on a stool at this point to do it. But as he's walking over, he sees me, and he did a lot of stuff with the paper that I worked for. So he comes over, and he gives me a hug, and he's like, thank you for being down here. And then I kind of follow him to film it just for our social. He gets up on the stool, but he does a Lambeau Leap in his gold jacket. And I'm standing there right below it. I'm like, this is so cool. I'm standing here with the guy who invented the Lambeau Leap doing it again in his Hall of Fame jacket.
Yeah.
And I'm standing here getting to like document this for everybody to remember. That was one of my coolest moments.
That is cool. I mean, there are moments in this business where you're like, that's a thing that just happened right there.
Yeah.
And that had to be one of them. It is super cool, and I'm looking forward to it. And you know what? Honestly, we're going to be back in Canton probably sooner rather than later, not just this year.
Next on your list.
But, yeah, we're going to be back in Canton later this month, next month. What month is it? I don't even know.
It's February.
But we'll be back at some point, and then we'll be back in August, obviously. But we're going to be back in Canton the next couple of years. I truly believe that. In this year's class, one of the big takeaways for me was how close this year's class puts a couple of former Panthers to being in consideration for those same kind of honors. I mean, Patrick Willis going in this year basically provides the framework for Luke Kuechly's candidacy when he becomes eligible next year. And they're the same guy. If you think Patrick Willis is a Hall of Famer, you think Luke is one too, because 8 years, 7 Pro Bowls, 6 All-Pros, Defensive Rookie of the Year, boom, 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 all the same. The exact same guy. Their resumes are identical. The only real difference is Luke's got a Defensive Player of the Year award that Patrick never won. They were both all-decade players. Patrick probably played on better defenses on the whole during his career in San Francisco. But basically identical players, cut short by injury at just 8 years. And we all sort of felt like we were robbed of extra football when we didn't see those guys anymore. So I know Luke, his personality is not going to be one. I would be very surprised if he's out there campaigning or anything like that. But I think his time will be sooner rather than later. And I think Andre Johnson going in kind of clears the way for us to consider Steve Smith's mm-hmm. candidacy in a different way, too, because we talked a lot going into that meeting about the three wide receivers that were stuck in a knot between Andre, Torrey Holt, and Reggie Wayne. We finally broke that tie and got Andre through. Well, guess what? Andre Johnson's the one most like Steve Smith mm-hmm. in that he didn't have the benefit of playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback. He didn't have the benefit of being surrounded by stars on offense around him. I mean, no offense to the Mohsin Mohammeds and Steven Davises and Deshaun Fosters of the world, but that's different than Edgerrin James and Reggie Wayne and all those guys in Indianapolis who got to play with Peyton Manning.
Right.
And it's different than Marshall Faulk and Isaac Bruce and Kurt Warner. So it's going to be interesting to see. I feel like I've committed those stats to memory. Steve's eighth on the all-time receiving yards list, ahead of all
franchise
three of those guys.
League.
Wow. Eighth all-time in the league. The only guy ahead of him who's not in the Hall yet is Larry Fitzgerald, who's not eligible.
Yeah.
So I got a feeling that now that we've got one of those receivers pushed through that pipe, there's an opening for Steve. Hopefully we can get to a point where we're discussing Steve in that room as a finalist, because I think his resume stacks up extremely favorably, you know, especially when you consider what he did as a returner early in his
yeah.
career, because he was one of the most dynamic players, you know, really that I've ever seen. And going back to the first time he touched the ball, he returned a kickoff mm-hmm. for a touchdown in his very first game. That kind of set the stage for what Steve Smith was going to be like.
And
so
Devin Hester got in this year.
And Devin Hester got in. So with his 32 touchdowns, which is about 50 fewer than Steve Smith. So Anyway, it was I think it was a good week, all things considered, for the Carolina Panthers based on those Hall of Fame discussions. And then it was Vegas. You've been to Vegas, haven't you?
I have
you?
Been to Vegas, and the way you came back and described it was so perfect. I remember the first time I was in Vegas, and I had gotten there before my family got in, and my brother walked into the hotel a few hours later, and he was like, "What is?" He immediately goes, "What is that smell?" And I said, "Cigarette smoke and broken dreams."
Yeah, it is. I went downstairs at 6:15 local time Friday morning to do some radio hits, talk about Julius and stuff. And there was a young entrepreneur of about 60 years old with a Coors Light and a Marlboro Red in his hand sitting at a slot machine. And I was like, I don't know if this man's polishing one off for the night or just starting on the next day's version of it, but that's a thing that's happening right there. I think I caught you off guard. I said Las Vegas, as a first-timer in that fine city, I said it reminded me of if New Orleans and Myrtle Beach had a baby and then got that baby implants. It was just a mess. It didn't seem quite real.
Right.
At any point in my visit, did it seem like this was a normal place?
That's the one you said that stood out the most to me. Like, this doesn't seem like it could be a real place.
Yeah.
It's a movie set.
I'm going to walk up here to the Bellagio and push on a wall, and it's just going to fall over like a set piece
in a movie. Did you take my advice, though, and go to the greenhouse in the Bellagio lobby?
We did. We checked out. The Bellagio is lovely. We saw a couple of great shows. Saw the Cirque du Soleil show there at the Bellagio. One night, it was quite something. Also saw my guy. I was in Vegas for the first time, so I felt compelled to see Mr. Las Vegas. That's right, Wayne Newton. Where's my microphone? Oh, I'm sitting in front of it.
Give us a line.
Donka Shane, darling.
Was it everything you dreamed of?
And more.
That's what Vegas gives you, more.
I hope that when I'm 82 years old, I can still tell all the same old stories I've been telling for the last 52 years. I hope that I can do it with a bounce in my step like he does. You know, I mean, listen, what do you want out of a Wayne Newton show? You want to hear Donka Shane? You want to hear Red Roses for a Blue Lady? You want to hear him tell Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis stories, you know, Elvis stories, all that great stuff.
Right.
And he did it. And it's like, this is everything I expected. I mean, it was a small room, a little cabaret type theater, but it was amazing. I would say I'll be back, but I'm going to need a really specific reason to go back to Las Vegas. Because the other thing I learned while I was out there is a little Las Vegas goes a long way.
Both times I've been has been for a reason, a wedding and a football game. And I don't know if I could be one of those people who are just like, we have a free weekend. Let's go to Vegas.
Yeah, man.
You know, no offense to those people. You go have fun. But there's about 100 other ways I think I'd rather spend my weekend. Vegas is a good time, but I don't need to go on my own.
It's a lot. I mean, it truly is. It is just a lot.
You know, the most annoying part about Vegas is that everything, all of the buildings are so big that you think, oh, okay, we're right here at the Bellagio. There's the Mirage. Let's just walk over there. And then because the buildings are so big, it throws everything out of proportion. And then you start walking and you realize, oh, I'm miles away from that building.
Yeah, I did that one day. I walked from Mandalay Bay back to the Mirage. And I was like, okay, that was 2 miles of my life. We will be back in Vegas, though, right?
Play there this year.
That's correct.
Yes, because I've heard.
Panthers at Raiders.
I have it on good authority that a lot of the Canales family and friends are going to make the short car ride from Southern California to Las Vegas for that game.
There you go. It's going to be on, and we'll see. It won't be a Super Bowl setting, but that's the other thing I learned there. It's that way every week.
Yeah.
Because if it ain't the NFL.
The football game is like the smallest thing on their radar.
Right. If it ain't the NFL, it's a Final Four or it's an Amway convention or whatever it happens to be.
Or a Stanley Cup final.
It's just gigantic and the entire town shows out. They know how to entertain there. I will give them that. So speaking of entertainment, we're about to dive full force into the next thing on the docket, which is going to be the Combine coming up in a couple of weeks. And we'll get to that. We'll have time to discuss the Combine later, but it's on. I mean, it's now that
the draft is here.
Now that football season's on, we're going to be talking franchise tag moves. We're going to be talking free agency. We're going to be talking Combine. It's almost like this business never stops.
I purposely have something on the calendar. I'm going to ask the question that I know every fan listening is asking. So I'm going to be the voice for the people here. Now that the coaching staff is more or less put together, you know, and I know it's finishing touches, at what point on the timeline do you think something gets done for either DB or Brian Burns?
Probably not yet. I mean, I think, honestly, most of the contract stuff happens combine and beyond because the combine's really that place where, in addition to scouting college players, all the agents are working the hallways.
Running into the agent at Starbucks.
Yeah, I mean, they're meeting with teams in boardrooms in the back and stuff like that. So I think the reasonable expectation is combine plus. There's usually about that week between the combine and the beginning of free agency. Where we'll get to all
that. March 16th this year or somewhere right around
Middle of March.
It's always around the Ides of March.
Yeah. So it is all coming, and we're going to have it all for you here at Panthers.com. So stay tuned for the latest on all that because, as we said, it never truly stops. So keep it here. We'll catch up with you soon. We may even have a happy half hour for you next week between now and the combine to get
Let's
you ready for all things Indianapolis. Until then, we will see you.
Bye.